It will be presented by Fred Frankel from UCLA, using parent-supervised playdates to improve peer relationship for elementary school children with autism.
Thank you, Nurit, and thanks for inviting me on this panel. I've already learned a lot just listening to Nurit's presentation. Let's see. I'm going to talk about our intervention for friendships that's been going on since 1991. It hasn't been a research study throughout. It's been a fee-for-service clinic in the outpatient department at UCLA. And it's about 600 clinic patients, we decided to write the manual, Children's Friendship Training. And we've just started our 175th group on Wednesday. What day is today? Today. And so we've seen about 1,400 children. We do mixed groups. We mix kids who have autism spectrum disorders with kids with attention deficit disorder, with kids with no particular disorder. But we screen them very carefully. And our distinguishing characteristics in our intervention is it's manualized, so it's run as a course. There are two sessions, a parent session and a child session, that go on at the same time. And we give socialization homework. And also very important is we prohibit social contacts outside the group between our group members. Our screening criteria, so we're screening for readiness for our particular program. And we don't have time in 12 weeks of 60-minute sessions to teach how to play games. So we want the kids to know how to play simple board games, checkers, Monopoly, Junior, whatever, and also know how to play simple sports likely to be played in the recess, like handball, for instance, which, by the way, isn't a sport. It's mainly waiting online, talking to the kid next to you. And then when your turn comes, you discuss the rules of the game briefly, you know, no waterfalls, no poppies. And then you play the game for about a minute, and then the loser goes back at the end of the line, and the game continues with the next pair of kids. So that's far from a sport. It's more of a mainly boys' excuse to get together and talk to the kid next to you. We also want kids who can maintain a shared focus in conversation. And have no more than a slight delay in age-appropriate social interests. Because the social interests really drive the friendship. What you can do together really determines how you that you go on to be friends. The kids that don't exhibit offensive behaviors. We're actually starting at the beginning of first grade these days. Two concurrent sessions, the child session. Is structured so that we review the previous homework. We give the kids a little bit of didactic, 10 or 15 minutes of instruction on rules of etiquette for certain steps in becoming friends. We rehearse them a little bit, and then they go out on the playground, and they play under our supervision, and hopefully they're using some of the rules we just taught them. The parent session, we review homework. We give the parents a handout each time, instructing on what the kids are learning and what their roles are in promoting friendship and that particular skill. And then at the end of the session, we get parents and children together, and we negotiate how they're going to do the next homework assignment, who they're going to call or whatever the homework assignment is. And the way we individualize is we learn from our patients. So what we're doing in these parent handouts is giving a high probability payoff to the skill. We're sending them home to do it with their kids, and then they come in the very next session, and the first thing we do is discuss what happened. You know, what were the barriers, what went wrong. Hopefully most of the time it does go right, but we learn a lot from what goes wrong. And this is the value of the group session, because when we're in a new population, and we've done this with kids with fetal alcohol spectrum disorders in one study, with kids with attention deficit disorder in another study, and kids with different ethnicities. What happens is when the parents come in and tell us what went wrong, we learn from them what kinds of barriers they face and what we need to overcome. And we put our heads together with everybody in the group, and the group size is usually 7 to 10 families, and we have 7 to 10 people working with us to try and overcome these barriers. that's pretty much everything in that handout. So the target, the ultimate goal of our program is to develop best friendships. Best friendships are probably the most meaningful social outcome in middle childhood. It has lasting beneficial effects, not only at the time, but as much as 10 years later in one follow-up study. And my definition, actually it isn't mine, but I can't remember where I got it from. Friendship is a mutual relationship formed with affection and commitment between people who consider themselves as equal. So a mutual relationship means that children choose each other to be friends. There's a kind of a chemistry. Teachers, as Neurath pointed out, teachers are very aware of this chemistry because they can see how the children interact together. There are children that have hot and cold relationships. That's not chemistry. That's something else. And then there are children who just naturally get together. And the play of children who really like each other is really palpable, as you can see, even through elementary school and probably through adulthood. And it's formed with affection and commitment. I think having a best friend is a child's first experience with true love, because they're putting another child on an equal footing with themselves. And also when best friends have an argument, they actually benefit from it, and they actually become more socially competent at resolving the argument, and they stay committed. And it's between people who consider themselves as equals. In other words, kids on the spectrum may consider themselves as equal. They may understand each other. And it may be a lifelong kind of commitment between individuals. This, by the way, is my tomboy daughter. And this is Batman, she called herself. And this is Captain America here. We had some trouble getting Captain America on a play date. The parents weren't terribly responsive. So my wife, one day we had costume day at elementary school, and my wife snapped this picture of the two of them, and we emailed their parents, and bingo, play date. So the main treatment modules in our intervention is finding common interest, joining a game. Those things we'll be talking about, a couple of other things we won't have time to talk about. And then ultimately being a good host on a parent-supervised playdate. And there are many steps to becoming best friends. It puts together all your social skills. You need everything. There's a list of 5 skills that we've identified. One of the first skills is having a neutral or positive reputation among peers. And one way to do that is to know how to play common games and being a good sport, being a good loser, being a good winner. The problems that kids encounter, and by the way, children on the autism spectrum disorder in our group share a lot of problems with kids who have trouble making and keeping friends regardless of the diagnosis. Many kids have these problems. And the way we teach is we don't go over what problems they have, we teach them the steps to how to do it right. What's happened before the children have gotten to us is they've developed a negative reputation in the peer group. This reputation has a life of its own, and it's been said that if a child started doing everything correctly one day, it would take quite a while before his peers finally accepted him because of the continuing negative reputation. And this is something we have to deal with in social skills groups. It's more durable than positive reputation. It involves behaviors that they bring to a new situation, and there have been studies showing that within 45 minutes, a child who is generally rejected by peers, if he's in a group of kids who don't know them, within 45 minutes they'll reject him too because of the same behaviors. So our approach to this negative reputation is let it die down. Don't try and make friends with people who don't want to be friends with you. Go somewhere else until the reputation dies down. We advocate passive rather than active change. There's nothing worse than somebody you don't like trying to make friends with you. You know, you're walking down the street and you see them and you kind of want to think about ways to cross over to the other side of the street so you don't have to interact. And so we allow that to happen. And schools, if the kids are included and fully included in classrooms, the schools do that for you over the summer. They randomize the kids so that the next year all the kids are anxious about who they're going to be friends with. So everybody has an equal shot at the beginning of next year. So it's a great way to just kind of let things die down. And if you do things correctly, chances are better that your reputation will die down. Another skill, which is number three on my list, but actually the one we teach first for practical reasons, is searching for mutual interests, something we call playing detective. And this has to do with conversational skills, not conversational skills in general, but having a very special conversation. What do you like to do? And here's what I like to do. And the kids on the spectrum have trouble, either they dominate the conversation with a focal interest or they don't maintain its flow. In both cases, they kind of miss the point of the conversation. It's as if they don't know why people are talking. And when you tell them and you give them a goal for why it's talking, very often it structures their conversation so that now they can focus on what they need to do. And this is true even for adults. I was coaching Little League, and there was this other adult that was coaching. I was an assistant coach. I don't know anything about Little League, but somebody was telling me what to do. And we were both psychologists, and we had this conversation, and we couldn't come up with anything we liked to do together, so we never went on to be friends, even though we kind of like each other. And so that's a very important conversation to have when you're first getting to know somebody. Children on the spectrum skip this step. If you ask them, what are your friends like, they have no clue. And it's very easy to teach them how to have a clue is to have them teach them to have this conversation. And here's parts of the handout from this conversation. To trade information means to give an important fact and get an important fact. When you answer a question, you may have to ask a question to keep the trade going. It's very difficult. And these are important facts to find out, I already mentioned. And don'ts, the don'ts are be a conversation hog. And, you know, in other words, it's a bad date and the guy's only talking about himself. You know, that's a conversation hog. Give only the facts that the person asks for and give the other person a chance to speak. And another thing is intimacy regulation is when you first get to know somebody, you want to keep your relationship superficial. And then there'll be an occasional trial balloon with something a little more intimate to see how it goes over. And if it's reciprocated, then you go on to be deeper friends. And if it isn't, then you stay acquaintances. And the last one is don't be an interviewer. Don't only ask questions and tell about yourself. So anyway, we teach the kids this. We have a practice conversation in session. We teach the parents what this is about. And then we give the homework assignment to call another member of our class who's cued in on what this call is about. And you practice conversation skills with the parent sitting right there. Prompting is necessary. Some kids may need a little rehearsal beforehand. We discourage giving a script, so that it becomes more spontaneous. And after a few practices on kids in the group, then the kids call somebody that they actually want to be friends with. There's where the chemistry comes into play. The kids choose who they're going to call. And here, this is my way of obscuring identity, is the negatives here, because we have a consent issue. So I apologize for that. But here's a parent reporting on a call to somebody that her daughter actually wanted to be friends with. This was the results of a homework assignment.
Katie called a friend from Sunday school to find out what she was going to wear.
Yeah.
Good. Sunday school. And this is a child who tends to wear interesting clothes to Sunday school.
Great.
With a really good story. And they talked for about 2 minutes. It wasn't a great phone call, but what happened afterwards on Sunday ended up being pretty cool.
Well, let me get to the phone call first. I mean, yeah, some of the kids aren't used to your child calling them, so they might be kind of thrown off. But if
they're
kind of trading information, and we think that this is a child by the phone call that's going to warm up to Katie, then it goes on your list of potential play dates.
Yeah.
So did they trade information at
they
all?
They did trade information. She asked her friend, I'm calling to find out what you're going to wear to Sunday school. And her friend said, well, I don't know yet, but I think I might wear that. And then her friend says, so what are you going to wear?
Good, they traded information.
And Katie said, I don't know, Mom, what am I going to wear? I said, probably pants. And she said, well, my mom thinks I'm probably going to wear pants. And I guess Maggie said, well, you always wear pants. And Katie said, yeah, I always do. Well, I got to go. Bye.
Okay. So
that actually was a good ending. That was the good ending.
I got to go by.
Yeah.
Okay. But they traded a piece of information.
They did.
And then just briefly, at Sunday school, were
at
they...
At Sunday school...
Studies?
I said, well, you might want to say something to Maggie about what you did choose to wear, so that she thinks that you actually really called her for this reason. And apparently she said to Maggie, you know, I really like what you chose. And Maggie said, oh, good. You want to go do jump ropes?
Great. Oh. Good. So this is a girl to put on the list.
Okay, so you can see not only how the homework is done, but also how important it is to involve parents in this whole thing, because they're right where you need them, right when you need them, right on the case. You know, so here she is practicing the phone, the conversation skills. The phone call isn't something kids do naturally. It's just a great way to practice conversational skills with your parent right there, and yet the peer isn't there looking at your parent saying, what the heck are they doing here? And they're ready to intervene and say something as necessary. And then in the situation, there she is, right on the spot, ready to promote play dates, or at least in this case, play interaction. And then the other skills, so you have this conversation, but then how do you meet the kids in the first place? If you ask parents, how do you make new friends? Most parents will say, well, you go up and shake their hand and you introduce yourself. And yet, that's not how kids make friends. In fact, it doesn't work for me. I go up and say, hello, I'm Fred Frankel, and then I don't know what to say next. You know, so that's the end of the conversation. In fact, what happens with kids is they watch ongoing play and they join ongoing play. It's a very low-risk way that neurotypical kids use to meet each other, and we teach it to everybody. Kids on the spectrum have trouble with reciprocating peer approaches, and they don't know how to approach peers, and they don't know how to respond to an approach. So here it is. We're teaching it all, teaching them all about it. Also, there's a problem of social goals that we teach later on in terms of a lot of kids who have friendship problems value winning the game as something more important than being liked by others. Being liked is on the list, but not at the top of the list. And also, they break game rules. And these are things we also overcome in different modules. So here's our parts of our slipping in handout. When do you do it? You do it at lunchtime, when kids are hanging around, before or after school, and when others are playing. And here she is. She's watching. And they're playing tic-tac-toe, and I don't know what this one's doing. These guys are playing, and she's waiting for her turn. When somebody loses, she's going to intervene and say, hey, can I take the winner? And chances are good, but not perfect, that they're going to let her in the game. When not to do it is when others are working and when they're listening to the teacher, which is very often the mistake that the friendless child makes, is disrupting the class. Watch the group nearby, join by helping them play their game. So if there's two kids, if there's one side that's winning and another side that's losing, which side do you ask to join? If you ask the kids, they'll say the winning side, and that's the side that needs the least help. The side to ask to join is the losing side. Of course, you don't say, hey, can you losers need another... You just say, can you use another guy on your team? And, you know, if you're any good at the game and you've checked out the game and they're at roughly your skill level, then you're going to even up the game and the game's going to be a lot more fun after you join. You also have to take no for an answer, because 50% of the time, any child who asks to enter is turned down. So you go find another group instead of coercing your way in, getting the teacher to say everybody has to let everybody in, which I think is a huge mistake. And here is how we do slipping in coaching. They've just had a didactic lesson on those rules, you know, waiting and watching and so on. And then we go out on the play deck and we organize a game of prisoner with the kids playing each other. And then we coach this particular kid here.
Okay, John.
Oh!
Pretend that you just got to the playground.
Wait, come
on. And you saw these kids playing this game and you decided you want to play. So what's the first thing you do? What do you do?
Watch.
Watch? That's right. That's the very first step. You remember?
You
got
to throw it.
What are you watching for?
The game.
You're watching the game for what?
The play.
You know what I see is what? If you know the game.
I called it.
The rules. That's right. So do you know the game?
Actually, I called it.
What's it called? Okay.
My God.
Prisoner, right? So what else are you watching?
Can I play?
Zach. Zach.
I gotta play the game.
Yeah. Are these nice kids? Are they playing nice?
Yeah.
Yeah? So are these kids you want to play with?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. And let's see what else. You need to wait, right? What are you going to wait for?
To be called in.
No, you're not going to be called in. What do you have to wait for? You're going to slip in. You just got here.
Slip into your game.
break in the game? So which team should you ask to play? The winning team or the losing team? The losing team. Why?
The losing team need help.
They need help. So which team should you join on this side? Can you tell?
That one?
That one? You think they need help more? Okay, so who do you think you're going to ask? We have to wait for a break, huh?
You're going to slip in, okay?
Okay. Looks kind of even, huh? You want to switch, though?
Okay.
Hold on.
Try to
Our kids always say yes. So notice we've just told this kid what the steps are. He doesn't really know until he does it. So you can't just tell a kid something. You actually have to show it in concrete terms, whether it be a child on the spectrum or a neurotypical kid. They don't understand until they actually see it happening and you actually coach them on how to do it with real kids. That's the purpose of the group. And then after a few more steps, and we also teach parents how to network with other parents. First of all, how to find the right kid to network over. You know, ask the teacher about, you know, who do they get along with, who they seem to play well with, and then make an approach to the parents. We have a few tricks to give parents to do that if they don't already have it. And then we're starting on organizing a successful play date. And the way it works is on a play date, the children and the parents work together. We teach the child the good host skills, and we teach the parents how to supervise and how to step in when you need to. So the errors that kids with friendship problems make are they're poor losers. They continue to, in other words, they get angry when they lose, or they don't want to lose, or they cheat. They continue to play even when the guest stops, so they'd be hooked on this video game. In fact, the studies on kids on the spectrum show that when they do have play dates, what it's usually composed of is one kid goes over to the other kid's house, plays video games, doesn't talk to each other, goes home. And really, that's not what we want. We want the gold standard, the quality play date here. So, you know, when they're playing a video game, they're more likely to happen. Also, leaving the guest alone is kind of similar to that, although there's another version of that is you're in a neighborhood with lots of kids. You've invited over one kid for a play date, and another kid knocks on the door. What do you do? Walk over to the door and say, thanks for stopping by. I'm busy right now. I'll get back to you later. In other words, you keep it as a one-kid play date. You don't violate the sanctity of the play date. A poor host is a bossiness, not allowing the guest to decide what to play. In other words, you have this kid over as your play slave. They're there just to do what you want. And terminating the game, you get tired of it, you just leave. Or criticizing the guest. He cheated, he's a poor player, he stinks, whatever. Those are great ways not to keep friends. And so we engineer the play date so that it's engineered more for success. We eliminate the games that are obsessions. Anything your kid is so obsessed about that he won't attend to his play date, goodbye. You know, that's not going to be it on the play date. And video and computer games are usually in that category. Trades may hurt somebody's feelings. Provocative games, water pistol is not something you should really do on the first play date. Shoot somebody in the eye and there's the end of the play date. Solitary or parallel activities can be done by yourself. That's why they're solitary. So watching TV or videotapes, not something you really need somebody to do with. You really want something where there'll be activities to share. Look at how excited those two kids were that Nareed showed, just being with each other, you know, and that's the chemistry. And by the way, you can tell that chemistry on your first phone call to a new kid. If they're happy to hear from you and they're, you know, not having much trouble talking to your child, then you got chemistry. If the child is rude, asking why you're calling, you know, not really keeping up the conversation, then you don't have chemistry. And you know in about 2 seconds, you know, gee, that's not good play date material. And you move on. So these are the rules of a good host. And this was interesting. The first rule I established when my son, who's now 26, was 5 years old, and I realized he wasn't born with social skills. And he had trouble sharing his toys, and I thought, well, you know, before the play date, I said, put all the toys that you don't want to share with your friend in the walk-in closet, lock them there, and don't tell them they're there. And but you have to share everything else. And I was half expecting, you know, his entire toy collection to be in our walk-in closet. But to my surprise, there were only a few toys in there, and he was really, the sharing no longer became a problem. The guest gets to pick the games. So these are, you know, good old Southern hospitality, I think they call it in the South anyway, the Southern United States. If you're bored, suggest a change in activity. Don't criticize the guest, and also be loyal to your guests, are the rules of a good host. So the way this thing goes is, you know, you pick your child, the child makes this phone call, and you see whether they like each other. And also, by the way, what are they going to do on the play date? So they discuss it over the phone. For instance, if they both want to ride bicycles, the child needs to bring over his bike, and that would be very important to discuss on the phone. If everything goes well, the child asks the other child for the play date, but doesn't make it themselves. The parent then steps in and gets the other parent on the phone and arranges the date and time of the play date over at their house. During the play date, you have to do something with the siblings other than keep them on the play date. You have to find something else for them. They encroach on intimacy, and sometimes the more competent, and I've seen this a lot, unfortunately, the more competent, socially competent sibling will steal the playmate, you know, and then they're just left playing by themselves. And younger siblings, you know, it's like babysitting, and you really want this to be an intimacy experience, not an occasion for more babysitting. During the play date, you monitor within hearing range. You're not part of the play date. You're letting the kids structure their own play date. If your child breaks a good host rule, you step in and remind them of the good host rule, and you know, and make sure they follow it, and then they send them back into the play date. And that's an instruction at a teachable moment. And here's the report. How are we doing on time?
3 minutes.
3 minutes? Uh-oh. I think I'm going to step. Unfortunately, we don't have time. Let me just go over some research results. This is the correlation between numbers of play dates and actual behavior observed on school playgrounds. A study, I used Connie Kasari's observation measure. And notice the huge correlation between the number of hosted playdates and children actually taking social turns with other children on the playground, and also their positive response to peer overtures. Nice little correlation there. I don't know cause and effect, though. We can't say that, but it's a nice relationship. This is our randomized study for the Center for Autism Research and Treatment. We had a randomized control study, and then we followed these kids up just recently, 32 months later, to see what happened. This is our number of arguments, basically, or amount of arguing on play dates pre. And by the way, our normative population, 3 was the cutoff. So anything less than 3 was within normal limits. Our pre was 5, post is 1.5, and 33 months later stayed not much different. Number of invited play dates was 0 here, or no, it was 1, but no change. The hosted play dates went up, but remember, these are hosted play dates with kids outside our group. They weren't allowed to make play dates with kids inside the group, so they're real play dates. And 3 years later, they went down slightly, but the interesting and rewarding thing for us is that the number, they were being reciprocated. Kids were inviting them over to the other house, and so that the sum total of play dates remained high. And here's our social skills rating scale. Problem behavior is going, it has a mean of 100 with a standard deviation of 15. So this went down within one standard deviation in terms of problem behaviors, and social skills stayed up. It went up to almost 100, almost the mean, and stayed that way 33 months later. Thank you very much.